So, Rabbeleezer of Worms, the Garmiza, 12th, 13th century French posek, French rabbi, is a very fascinating resolution for a very well-known machlokas as to whether the Jews sat in huts that were man-made, or at least manufactured, from wood, sukkos mamish, not clear whether HaKadosh Baruch Hu provided them or enabled them to build, sounds like HaKadosh Baruch Hu provided, or certainly the other option, Anani HaKavod. Everyone knows that machlokas in the Gemara and Sukkah. Hard to imagine a machlokas about something so factual and something so seminal. So Rabbi Elazar of Garmiza says something fascinating, groundbreaking even. A lot of people aren't aware of it. That there is a timeline, and the Tanaim are referring to different parts of the timeline. Namely, once they left Egypt, and for the 40 years during the desert, they were surrounded by Anani HaKavod. And this is pretty consistent with all the psukim, specifically in Beshalach, where the Anan follows them and leads them. But the Anan is always surrounding them, leading them. You could have claimed that it was only leading them from location to location, as the psukim in Bahaloscha suggests, and really that it's Siv tries to establish such a compromise, that the Anani HaKavod were responsible for the journey, and the regular huts housed the Jews in their encampments. But Rabbi Elazar of Garmiza, hundreds of years earlier, had a slightly different resolution. For 40 years, the Jews lived in supernatural huts, clouds, Anani HaKavod. But when they began the process of entering Eretz Yisrael, and they began to war with Sichon and with Og, at that point, HaKadosh Baruch Hu housed the Jewish people in regular huts. No longer were they housed in supernatural huts, in Anani HaKavod. And it's fascinating that this would be the shift. Historically, for 39, 40 years, they lived in supernatural huts of clouds of glory. That final year, and maybe even during the 14 years of settling Israel, conquering Israel, distributing Israel, they then lived in wooden huts. And the machlokas of the Tanaim in Sukkah is which part of this process is most prominent. When we sit in our sukkos, which are we trying to capture? And of course, we try to capture both. They're not mutually exclusive. Why would HaKadosh Baruch Hu shift? Why would there be a transformation of sukkos from supernatural huts to man-made huts, or at least human huts, wooden huts, as they're about to launch the war? Well, two things come to mind. And the truth is, as far as I know, it's the Chassam Sofer, amongst all the Mefarshim who adopts this Rokeach. He speaks about it several times in his drushos. I think two ideas come to mind. One of them, Chassam Sofer alludes to, one of them is a slight derivation, is when we go to war, it's interesting that the Anani HaKavod, whether or not the Anani HaKavod dominated for the 40 years in the desert before they reached the banks of Eretz Yisrael, or whether there were two types of sukkos, depending upon the Machlokas Tanayim. We don't really find the Anani HaKavod participating in war. Even in Beshalach, where there's an actual war, the war is waged by the sea. There's a lot of warlike imagery, a lot of warlike metaphors, and of course Hashem Ishmael Chama. The Anan is just the holding pattern. The Anan is the stalling tactic. The night before Kriyas Yamsuf, the Egyptians were charging, the Egyptians were about to assault the Jewish people, and the Anan, the Kadosh Baruch Hu, created this buffer, this holding pattern, until the winds could gather, until the sea could be split. We don't find the Anan responsible for war. And in the war in the end of Beshalach, the war is waged by human beings, Moshe and Yehoshua. And Moshe actually instructs Yehoshua, Tsehi lachem ba'amalek, and according to one Lashon in the Medrash, Tseh min hanan. You would expect, especially if these sukkot are clouds of supernatural glory, and they pave the way, and they eliminate serpents, and they cool the ground, and they prevent the effect of the sand and the hot trek through the desert upon the palms of people's feet, well, they should also be some secret weapon for the Jewish people. And yet you don't find that. And ironically, the second that war heats up, the Anani HaKavod transform into man-made huts. And essentially, war has to be fought by human beings. HaKadosh Baruch Hu, for whatever reason, he could have delivered Eretz Yisrael to us then, he could have delivered Eretz Yisrael to us now, but HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants us to conquer it, wants us to defend it. We wish for a day in which a universal recognition of our rights to this land would obviate the need for war, but HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants human beings to be involved in defending our land and achieving our land, and David HaMelech has to fight wars for Eretz Yisrael and for Yerushalayim. And in a very famous medrash, which Rav Amital would quote for us very often, Hashem turns to David HaMelech and says, Shali v'shalcha hi anitzachon, that even though in war, the best of human, under pressure and tension and human work and human dedication comes through, and we know that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is assisting us, HaKadosh Baruch Hu misalach b'ker of machanecha, but HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants us to take credit. Something we struggle with in Israel. I know my children serve in the army, and I get front row. My Talmidim serve in the army, and I visit army bases, and you don't just build an army by taking a few yeshiva bachrim from the base matters. There's an army culture, and there are army magazines, and there are awards, and there's an ethos and a culture, and at some point to a religious Jew, it seems like, well, are we blurring HaKadosh Baruch Hu's role? And somehow we have to pull off both, that the boys feel that there's a sense of HaKadosh Baruch Hu facilitating, but they're still expressing their talent, their hard work, their effort, their dedication. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu does not want Anan Yaakov to be responsible for military success. And at the moment that the wars are not just random, as they are in Parshas B'Shalach, but the wars become much more structural and routine and enduring, as they do in Parshas Chukas and Balak, at that point the sukkahs transition from supernatural clouds to regular huts, regular wooden huts. And, of course, the second transitional point, which Chassam Sofer stresses a bit less, is it's not just war, but transitioning from the desert to Eretz Yisrael is transitioning from a supernatural world into a more natural world, into a less fantasy world, and that iconic shift from clouds of glory to huts of wood help the Jewish people realize that this point is going to take a partnership between HaKadosh Baruch Hu's supervision and HaKadosh Baruch Hu's delivery, then human effort and human huts and human construction. Again, a very, very powerful microcosm for or symbolism for what we experience in Eretz Yisrael. So many people can only see Israel as the land of supernatural clouds and the Kotel and supernatural sites and Kever Rachel. And then those of us who live in Israel know that life is also traffic tickets, which I just got to this summer, unfortunately. And life is also medical appointments, and life is taxes, and life is garbage collection, and it's man-made efforts to create a city and to create a community. So the huts of the sukkah and the transition from supernatural clouds to wooden huts didn't just signify the shift into war, but the shift into a very, very different reality. And sukkah then becomes the icon. Ironically, sukkah becomes the launching pad for settling Israel. Essentially, they're living in sukkahs, whether these are military huts or huts in which they're living temporarily. Sukkah becomes not just the symbol of HaKadosh Baruch Hu's supernatural providence when we left Egypt, but a transitional point into entering Eretz Yisrael. And I think there's one other element, and that is that as they enter Eretz Yisrael at this point, our international role becomes a little bit more pronounced. When we're in Egypt, we're slaves. We have no voice, no interest, no role, no hope, no expectation. Now we're people. We're entering our land. The Jews are alive again as a people. People are asking, what does the Jewish nation have to say about? What type of state are the Jews constructing and assembling? And our international profile rises and awakens. And the sukkah, because it has that international symbolism, because Lasid Lavor, HaKadosh Baruch Hu creates the sukkah to protect all, because the sukkah suggests HaKadosh Baruch Hu's hashgacha for all humanity, because the sukkah is the mitzvah that the Ummos HaOlam are expected to uphold, as we read in the Haftarah of the first day of Sukkos. But again, more internal, because the sukkah represents a universal symbol of providence and protection and shelter. It isn't ritual-based as matzah or maror. Maror has very little resonance for a non-Jew. Matzah has very little resonance for a non-Jew. A sukkah is an intercultural symbol of protection, of shelter, of HaKadosh Baruch Hu's hashkacha. And at this point, maybe the Umos HaOlam aren't privileged to an Ani HaKavod. That's something which is unique to the Jewish people, a sign of love, a sign of Shechina. But at this point, our responsibilities extend to people who may not be privileged to an Ani HaKavod, but who certainly are privileged to Sukkos Mamish, to protection, to shelter, to sustenance, to prosperity, to welfare. And we have to realize that despite our luxury of an Ani HaKavod, we have to labor to provide Sukkos Mamish to a broader swath of humanity. So I think there are three very, very different, they're all related obviously, but three different but related elements towards this transition from supernatural clouds to wooden huts, which the Rokeach, Rebbe Elazar of Vermaisa, spoke about. Number one, war is intended to be fought by human beings, not supernaturally, of course, with Hashem's assistance behind the scenes, but human beings taking credit. Number two, we're transitioning into a much more natural-based reality. We're charged not just with receiving the Torah at Har Sinai, but trying to build a community and a society and a nation and a politics and welfare and economy. And then finally, because now that we enter Eretz Yisrael, we're facing nations of the world, their expectations of us. We're reaching our own. We're emerging as a national, international force, as a nation in their homeland. Of course, our presence here is contested, and the Sukkah reminds us that HaKadosh Baruch Hu protects humanity and also delivers this land to our people. It also, maybe this is even a fourth point, has a way of almost decentralizing human property. Human beings don't own their own home. We all live in Sukkos, and it echoes with that first Rashi in Bereishis. Why does HaKadosh Baruch Hu begin the Torah with Bereishis? To establish HaKadosh Baruch Hu's proprietary nature upon the entire world, and therefore he delivers lands to whomever he chooses, and if he delivers the land of Israel to his people, despite the historical opposition, then that's built into history, that Hashem can allocate lands. And to a degree, Sukkah also represents that HaKadosh Baruch Hu, people leave your home, so your home is no longer your home, and we share a joint sukkah, and everyone sits together under one roof, and this echoes the Gemara in Sukkah and Chav Ches, that everyone can live in one sukkah, Kol Ezrach Bisrael Yishru B'Sukkos, that all the Jewish people, so there's no land, there's no property, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu therefore delivers land to whom he chooses. And as we enter Eretz Yisrael, I think the sukkah connotes that fourth element, not just that our international responsibility to inform the world about HaKadosh Baruch Hu's providence and Hashgacha, but also that this is our land, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu expects us to live there despite the opposition, because land isn't owned by any human entity. Chag Sameach.